Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Figure. We've done that then! Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. Get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow.
Well, the first thing that occurs to me, Andrew, is if as much time
did
passes...
Did you call me Andrew?
I did.
Wow. You know, my mother, in the majority of my life, was the only person... who regularly called me by my by name, Andrew. Yes. The only one.
Well, I hope she's watching somewhere.
Yeah,
she'll be proud of me.
She will be.
Yes, if as much time passes between the recording of our third podcast as between the first and second, we'll be doing the third one post World Cup here in Qatar 2022.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a while.
It is fair to say that a number of different factors have stopped us following up on the first. Thank you to all of you who were interested and had something to say about that particular edition. And it has inspired us, Andrew, to go forward a recording on a weekly basis now.
Yeah.
I would like to think.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Yeah. So, since we last sat in the Grey Lounge, an awful lot has happened.
The world has changed.
The world has changed dramatically. Football has changed. Handball law has changed.
I'm back again.
No.
It's almost back to normal. It's almost back to pre, whatever it is we're doing.
Well, yes and no. You see, I don't think that... I think this week's meeting has once again muddied the water to a point whereby we will only continue to argue between now and the end of the season about all of the same things, because nothing really has changed. The one that irritated most of us was the one that was given against Eric Dyer, and that's going to continue to be a penalty.
Yeah, I've got it here in front of me as well, the what they've told us. Changes in the approach. I read these this morning before we came to do this, right? And when I read these, it's almost like a handball pre-VAR. Almost. All the things I'm reading here, you won't be... position of the arm, when the arm is in expected position given a player's action, right? Ability to react, we know that. Direct shot at goal, we know that. I just think that's exactly where we were.
We were, but there will be confusion over the half sleeve, you know, whereas at one time the arm was just that, to the top of the shoulder. It isn't anymore. And the half sleeve is not really where we should be drawing the line. As you've said many times on BeIN Sports already, the line comes from the top of the armpit,
yes,
which takes it beyond the sleeve.
Correct.
So there's an area of contention straight away.
So. And did you know the Robin Koch one, Leeds?
That will continue to be a penalty because his body was his arm was in an unnatural position. That's
no, it wasn't.
Well, it wasn't, but that's the argument.
Do you know what they didn't decide on that one as well? Who decides whether Mo Salah's shot is on target or not? Because I didn't think it was.
Well, you see, that'll be the guy sitting in VAR. See, nothing's really changed. This is my problem.
Yeah.
At the start of the season, week one, I bought into referees going to the monitors. That's all we'd asked for. The match day referee ultimately made the decision about what was happening in the football match. Well, that's not the case. It's... To this point, no referee has gone to a monitor and stood by his original call.
Right.
They've all been told, in my view,
yeah.
that they need to change their mind. And each and every one has, including Martin Atkinson, who gave the Lindelof penalty, and now we all agree shouldn't have done.
Yep.
Agreed?
Yes, agreed 100%.
But he changed his mind. Nobody's gone to a monitor and said, no, I'm happy. I'm happy with the decision I made. They've all overturned their original call.
Oh, that's not good.
Which tells me that Stockley Park are still ruling the roost.
Yeah.
Now, do you know the easy change now that will prove me wrong? Let us listen in to the conversations that take place between the referee and Stockley Park. Why not?
Everybody.
There is no good
everybody
reason
Everybody listen
to.
In. You mean viewers?
All of us.
Viewers?
Absolutely. As happens in MLS.
Not just commentary teams?
Everybody. Educate us. Help educate us. Let us listen. What is it you're discussing? If you have nothing to hide...
If you're not scared of it.
Why would you not do that? Why would you not help us all? COVID has adversely affected everything, Andy, to the point whereby no one's in grounds. This is a wonderful opportunity to educate everybody, like you did when we started out in 92 and changed analysis. Let us listen. What are you saying? Why are you giving that decision? Give us the ability to join in, if you like, by just listening. And if there's nothing, I repeat, if there's nothing to hide, why?
Well, I just think they would be. I don't know what the conversations are, but you can imagine them. There's a referee sitting in Stockley Park. There's a referee walking to a monitor who's made a decision. What does that referee in Stockley Park say? Does he say, I think you're wrong?
Yes.
Or does he say,
I think it's Simon Hooper it was, wasn't it? The award when Connolly wasn't given a pen at Brighton.
Yeah, yeah.
He initiated the contract. It's a dive. Well, neither of those two things are a factor.
No, they're not.
It wasn't, and whoever initiates the contact is an irrelevance.
It's irrelevance.
So let us listen in. Let us hear what you're actually saying, and I think the game would be better for it. I cannot think of a good reason why not.
I can. Mike Riley.
That's the only one.
Well, there you go.
I'll give you another one. David Ellery. Brilliant piece from Sam Wallace in The Telegraph Thursday. How many law changes has David Ellery come up with since he took over as what is his title? Managing? I'm looking for it here.
Okay,
he's in charge at IFAB. IFAB assumed jurisdiction from FIFA in 2017.
How many directly attributed to him?
Law changes, yes.
I would say, kickoff has been able to play a goal kick into your penalty area. I think that's his.
Mm-hmm.
That's two. I'll double it. I'll say four.
You're 174 short.
I didn't even know there were 174
178 laws. Law changes he's been responsible for, including the colour of the tape on the socks, to passing the ball backwards from the kickoff, to a complete revision of the handball laws that means the game finds itself in the handball chaos it does now. There are many others that I could mention.
Wow.
178 law changes.
The game, I keep listening to people last weekend, people who have been in the game for such a long time, love this sport, live, eat and breathe this sport. People like Steve Bruce, people like Roy Hodgson. And they keep going on about this is a sport that needed tweaking to take it into the 21st century, in my opinion. It didn't need changing to the dramatic way that we have changed it. And when you hear these people talk with such passion and to using things like they're destroying our game.
Well,
it's unbelievable, Richard.
You can find this article online, obviously, and I encourage everybody to do so. I'd love to read it to you in its entirety, but the last paragraph. Ellery is already past 11 rewrites of the VAR protocol.
Wow. Well, that alone
still ultimately undermined by its obsession with correcting clear and obvious errors. Which is all a matter of opinion.
It is.
Instead of simply all errors, all errors, which would have included the goal that Sheffield United thought they got at Villa. His new handball law meant that in La Liga in Spain and Italy's Serie A, which implemented the hardline interpretation last season, they experienced a dramatic spike in penalties, 48 and 57 respectively, compared to 20 in the Premier League. That is the effect of the tinkering of IFAB and Ellery, a man who seems determined to pursue change, whether we like it or not. David Ellery's another man.
It's a change for change's sake, as far as these people are concerned.
He's another man, Andy, whose opinion he believes to be correct and he respects
Staggering.
Entirely.
Can I ask you this? You can deal with it. Why do these two individuals command such power over football and its laws? Why are we allowing it? Why does football, as Roy Hodgson says, we need to take football back from people who don't know football? I used to say these people, David Ellery and people like that, know the laws. Actually, I'm not so sure they do know the laws anymore. right? But they don't know the game, and I stand by that. These people do not know football.
Well, they know the laws of the game, but what you're saying is they don't understand the game itself.
They don't understand the game. No, they don't.
No, that's true. David wasn't necessarily a particularly good referee. In my view, enormously overpromoted, and I would say exactly the same about Mike Riley. But Mike...
That's Chesterfield. Mike did, tell
you. Mike did what Richard Scudamore wanted him to do, what Mike Foster, who's now the chairman of the PGMOL, asks him to do. So he's a very useful man to have in that post. You don't want resistance if you're management of a senior level in an organisation.
Why do people, when they go into a sport like football, and it's such a huge... It has got bigger and bigger over the last 30 years. There's absolutely no doubt about that. It's grown so much so. But why do people, when they go into these positions, go power mad? Why do they think they have to... Why do they think, I have to change it? Is it almost justifying the position?
In some ways, yeah.
Why change it? If it ain't broke, that old adage, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Well,
I think their adage is, if it ain't broke...
Break it.
Yes.
Well, let me tell you, David, and who's the other one?
Mike.
David and Mike, you're doing a great job.
Yeah, I mean, the meeting this week, we reported on beIN Sports first on Monday night, the slight changes. There was a meeting this week, Andy, at which broadcasters, press and the PGMOL sat down to discuss. It's look at that from a different perspective. So already this season, we've adversely affected the fortunes of Crystal Palace, Manchester United, Brighton and a whole lot of others that going forward
Spurs
will be different, Spurs. So, you know, how can that be a fair and level playing field? But nothing will change. We will continue to argue about handball all season long, I promise you.
I just one more on this, because I got this the IFAB thing through this morning, Rich, with all the pictures showing why it would be a handball. And I was looking at Eric Dyer's. This is the one that fascinates me, because nobody who's played the game can understand what they're talking about, why Eric Dyer should remain a penalty. And what they've done beautifully in the presentation here, I've got it here, consider ball touches hand or arm, that is clearly raised above the shoulder. Now, everyone who's played the game knows that when you're backing and you jump, you can't jump without your arms going above your shoulders, right? But where they've frozen the picture for the Dyer one is after the ball has hit his arm, which is below his shoulder length, right? It's below it. And his hand is above it. So they've moved it on a couple of frames so that the ball's gone away, but his hand like that is a little bit above his shoulder. So emphasising that the fact is, if they'd actually put the picture where the ball hitting his arm, right, from Andy Carroll's header, it would be below his shoulder.
Well,
this is the nonsense that they're putting out there.
But this has been our argument, again, on something we've discussed on beIN Sports time and time again over the last season. With offside, they show us a couple of lines, but they haven't shown us in the same picture at what point they're taking that line.
No.
Where is the ball?
Yeah.
Has it left the foot by a second? If it's left the foot by a second,
it's 25
makes a
frame,
big difference.
25 frames, isn't it?
Makes a big, big difference. I didn't intend to concentrate.
No, VAR. No, we can't get rid of it.
We do have a guest upcoming, very good friend, Andy, of ours. I've known for a long, long time. We ran into him many years ago in the Leeds car park, if you remember.
Yeah.
He was chief football writer then, I think, for the Daily Mail. I'll run through all this again with him in a moment. But he'd written about attendances being down in the Premier League as a result of television.
Yes.
Sky's derogatory influence
yes,
on the game.
Yes.
And the point you made to him was that, that actually all the stadiums had
been rebuilt.
Rebuilt at that time.
Seats were being put in and everything like that.
But, it's a little bit. It reminded me that of your view on where to stop the game, which frame.
Yeah.
It was fairly obvious to us, but not most others.
Yeah, we had a nice debate, and Neil was offering his opinion, and I was offering mine. It was quite sparky, but I knew Neil from my time at Villa as well. He worked for the Birmingham Evening Mail as well in the mid to late 70s, so I knew him quite well from then.
When you had the club?
Yes, yes.
The Holy City Zoo?
The Holy City Zoo. My goodness. My goodness. How did I get away with that? 1979.
Well, you didn't just get away with it. As you told us in the opening podcast, Ron Saunders almost encouraged you.
Yeah, he did.
Certainly
actually.
Gave you the permission to be a club owner.
To go and open it. He must have knew he was selling me.
Anyway, just a couple of pieces of housekeeping. Thank you for all of you who took the time to post, email and get in touch with encouraging messages after our debut podcast. As Andy will tell you, we don't need a lot of encouragement, in truth, do we?
But no.
This is an exclusive podcast. You won't find us anywhere else, so do follow and subscribe. Share on whatever platform you get your podcasts on. You can follow us and get in touch via Twitter at Keys and Grey Pod and on Instagram at Keys and Grey the Podcast. Email to Keys and Grey the Podcast at gmail.com. And so too, our guest, Andy. I did say to you a little earlier, I wonder if he remembers the incident at Elland Road where you trapped his tie in my
that was an accident.
Passenger door window. It was an accident,
But he let in too far.
You berated him for his
view. He was invading my space.
No, in fairness, we chased after him because he'd written an article in the Mail suggesting that Sky had adversely affected crowds in the Premier League.
Right.
You made the point to him a little aggressively.
Well, I was defending my sport.
Your broadcast company, yeah. The reason for that was half the stadiums had been knocked down.
Yes.
Because they were being rebuilt.
Yes.
I'm not sure Neil ever really got the chance to reply before we drove off. So here is Neil Harmon, former chief sports writer, chief football writer of the Daily Mail and many other guys down the years. Neil, how are you?
Hi, Neil.
Hi, guys. As I say, it's an absolute pleasure to hear your voices again. That one hasn't slipped my memory. I've still got the tie that's slightly torn in half. But,
well, Neil, it wasn't my fault that having accidentally trapped it, Keezy decided to drive away with you stuck to the car. That wasn't my fault.
Was it the Portland Hotel? I seem to think it might have been.
No, it was the Elland Road car park.
Yeah.
Because we
oh,
just...
the Elland Road car?
Yes.
Oh, that incident.
Yes, that
yeah.
incident,
that
yes. Yeah, we just finished, and I said to Andy... I said,
hold on, does that mean there was more than one year?
Probably.
So there he is.
Probably.
Do you remember the article? Just before we talk about the book, do you remember the article? And be honest now, to what extent did the Daily Mail want Sky to fail?
I don't think it was... I can't imagine that... Let's put it this way. At that stage... In my time as the chief football writer, I wasn't told what to write because in the end, I'm afraid my demise there was the fault of a sports editor who rather decided that he knew everything and I knew nothing. At that stage, I think I knew a little bit more about what was going on. But that it was never my intention to suggest. I mean, let's be fair, Richard. Sky Sports was very, very good to the press in those days. I mean, there was actually a show in which we were invited
to
give our opinions. Hold the back page, as it was initially called.
Well, you see, you all fell for the three card trick because I can tell you the reason for the hold the back page was very simple. As many of our best ideas were born, it was in a pub, and we were discussing how can we get the guys on side. Mm. And it was Andy Melvin, our executive producer, who said, well, I've got this idea of a show where the press boys come in and, you know, they've got a beer and a cigarette and they all stand around this green baize, because that your archetypal press reporter at the time, and they just discuss football stories. And they'll be so charmed by the fact we've given them airtime, they'll all change their minds about us. Genius. So yeah. That's what we did.
Yeah.
And it worked. And didn't it work?
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, there are... there are certain of my number, some who are still with us and some not, who made a very considerable extra living on the back of the publicity that they got for being on that show. So I thought it was wonderful. I suppose at that time I must just have thought that you were, to quote you, adversely affecting Gates, and it was an opinion, and we were all. We were entitled to them in those days. Some are still, and I can understand why you took it as a bit of a personal affront. But it was never meant to be a criticism of the company or what it did for football and what it continues to do for football, which I think is for the most part very, very positive.
Yeah, I was interested, Neil, because you'll get it from our perspective as well. We were fighting everybody with not just one but both hands tied behind
sometimes,
our backs. It was a difficult period, and for sure, and I've said this many times, Fergie didn't want it to work. He did everything he could in his first 6 months to prove himself right that it would shut within that period of time. But anyway, just something you said there, in those days you were able to write what you wanted to. That then latterly at the Mail was not the case.
Well, I lost my job. Well, I walked away from it. What I thought was probably one of the best jobs in the game, because I couldn't tolerate my copy being altered. And usually to satisfy a particular sports editor's sense of vengeance against people who he had come up against in a previous writing career. I'll leave it no more than that. But I couldn't carry on.
Well, well done,
having
you.
My copy. Yeah. Having my copy altered, it just didn't sit fairly with me, and I was surprised that the Daily Mail actually sided with him rather than me. But I was one of many who left under his aegis, so it wasn't just me.
Is that a no-no if you're a respected journalist, Neil, that your copy should be
right.
altered?
Yes.
I mean, is that like you just don't do that?
Well, the sub editor can alter it. Can alter grammar. He can come
yes,
on to you and
that.
Say, "Did you really mean to say this? Did you perhaps not mean to say that?" But I'll give you a very quick example. Oh. I was with Newcastle United in Yugoslavia. It might have become Serbia or Croatia by then. With Kenny Dalglish in the old UEFA Cup, if memory serves me right. And I wrote a story about this particular match. I think Red Star Belgrade comes to mind. I think they were playing.
Yeah.
And the sub-editor rang me back and said, the sports editor's changed it. It's changed your story to say that if Newcastle don't win this tie, Kenny Dalglish will get the sack. So I said, well, that's simply not true. He said, well, the sports editor insists that goes in under your name. I said, well, look, and I rang Sir John Hall, who was at the team hotel, and I said, John, this is what's going to appear in the Daily Mail tomorrow, just to warn you. And he said, well, it's frankly a complete bunch of lies. I said, well, I just don't want you to think that I've written it. I'm happy to send you what I've written so you know exactly what I've done.
Well done.
And the story appeared. The story appeared in the paper, and that was the thin end of the wedge for me. I had to go.
Quite right. Well done. I don't want to press you too far, but obviously I'm fascinated. Is this former sports editor working in broadcasting now?
Sadly, he passed away last month.
Okay. Right. Okay. So it's not the one I thought.
He didn't work in broadcasting, no.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for clearing all of that up for us. Now, this is extraordinary. Close quarters. Let me just read some of the publicity surrounding the book. Close Quarters is the inspirational, against-the-odds story of Wickham Wanderers, the poorest club in League One, and how it shapes into a side that sustains a 9-month challenge for promotion through the global pandemic. And up through a playoff final. I mean, it's extraordinary, Neil, this. It's been so well received, too, I'm delighted to say, by former colleagues alike and others. But what on earth gave you the inspiration to think, do you know, I'm going to write a book about Wickham Wanderers? Why?
Well, the manager, Gareth Ainsworth, and I live about 10 miles apart, and we often bumped into each other in a coffee shop in a nice town called Wokingham. And we got chatting one day, and I said, Gareth, you know, you're about to become the longest serving manager in the Football League. Why don't we do something together? And this was in June last year. He said, well, Neil, he said, to be perfectly honest, we're going to have a shit season. He said, we've got no money. We've got nine players. We had nine players at the start of the first practice session. I think it's going to be a really, really tough time. And To which my response was, well, if you think about it, Gareth, how many football league clubs are in your shoes? All right, you may have less money than some and less players than others, but quite frankly, survival is the name of the game these days. And I think chronicling a season of survival would actually open a lot of people's eyes to how tough this bloody job is.
Mm.
And he said, after a few minutes and another couple of cappuccinos, he said, OK, let's do it. Let me clear it with the chairman. And Wickham, at that stage, was run by a supporters' trust.
Mm.
And if he's happy to go along with it, the players will fall into line because that's the way I know what they're like. And if I say we should do this, they'll agree. And within a week, we signed the deal to do it, expecting it would be a traumatic. Well, it was, but not in the sense in which we started out. And literally within 3 weeks, the new prospective new owner had appeared on the scene from Louisiana, of all places. A lawyer who had no inside track on English football at all.
That's the norm these days. That's the norm.
Standard football owner.
I know. The thing was, as I learnt later, he'd actually had a chance to buy Yeovil and they had kind of reneged on it. And then he took it upon himself to ring Steve Dale at Bury with an offer.
Really?
And we all know... Yeah, he did. I didn't know this when we had our first two or three conversations, and he said, "This guy's a screwball." That was his exact words.
Well, he found out, Neil, what the rest of us subsequently did. Yeah. Sadly for Barry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so he said, "I asked this guy, tell me how much you want," and he wouldn't tell me. So I said, "Well, that's it. I can't deal with this fella. What's next?" And he was recommended Wickham. So he turned up. He said, it's nice. It's not far from Heathrow Airport. Seem like decent people. How much do you want? And the chairman said, well, we'd like $500,000, please. And he said, before I knew it, I'd signed the cheque. So then I went home and told my wife. He said, I know I must be crackers. So on the basis of that, he appeared and he spoke to the fans and he spoke to the players. And it was quite an astonishing situation where they actually needed 75% of the supporters' trust approving him to be approved, which is quite a significant. I mean, it's normally 50, 51, but 75 is cutting it fine. He actually got 95 in the end of support, and so it went on, and so it went on, and within a month of the start of the season, Wickham were top of the table.
Yes,
so we're in the canteen looking at each other, saying, Is this for real?
When's it going to end?
I thought you were supposed to be bottom. What's going on? Really?
And struggling. What are you doing to my book?
And so it went on, guys. So it went on, and it got crazier and crazier. The one thing I did find, which to me was like going back in time 40 years when I started up in this crazy world of writing. The players were terrific. Mm. They bared their souls. I didn't think they would, because I was a complete stranger to them. I could have been anybody. And their willingness to tell their stories, good and bad, because I said to them at the start, unless this book is true and authentic, it won't sell. People will see through it.
Mm.
And they were so honest.
Isn't it refreshing? So it takes me back to what we were discussing when we started, when Shreevesy would wait in a tunnel for Dennis Wise at Chelsea and say, hey, Den, you know, fancy coming on tomorrow night, 300 quid. You could do that in those days, but it's impossible now. And that's one of the beauties, I think, of football lower down, isn't it?
Without a doubt. Going on the coach the first time, I went with him to Rochdale, of all places. And I thought, well, me stepping onto the coach is one of those moments when you look at their faces and you wonder whether they're going to be, oh, God, here he is.
Yeah.
Or it's a welcoming... And I remember Adebayo Akinfenwa, obviously the brightest star in the Wickham constellation, said, you're one of the team, bro.
Yeah.
That's
You're
nice.
One of us.
Yeah. That's nice. I had the opposite. I had the opposite, Neil. We used to travel with the bus.
Everybody did, though, then.
Yeah, in Liverpool and Everton.
But they did in the Midlands.
It was Howard Kendall who said, you are no longer
press
one of the team,
travelled
bro.
Down the bus.
See ya. Get off.
Howard threw you off.
Howard threw us off,
good lad. Well done, Howard.
That's when it all changed.
Howard thought he was a great man, Howard. But no. So there I was. I was kind of embedded almost with the team, in the dressing room, in the canteen, in the medical room, as they poured out their emotions. So, if I say it was an easy book to write, it was only that because they made it very easy for me.
I was trying to think of sort of sport. Isn't Alan Parry associated with Wickham?
Alan Parry, yes, very much.
Did he have a view on the book?
Well, I've seen Alan. Has. I saw Alan. He was still reading it when I saw him on the first day of the season when they played Rotherham. But I haven't had an irate phone call yet, so I'm presuming. And he does get a couple of mentions, as you can imagine. Yes. He gets a bit carried away.
He's the only football commentator I know that's been on two disrepute charges.
Yes.
And I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. And of course, he was always our Monday night football commentator, yeah. Neil. And Trevor Francis. Yeah, Trevor did the colour. And this particular evening, Peter Hindlove had been sent off playing for Birmingham, picked up two yellows. I think the ref was Rob Stiles. And obviously it was a fairly contentious situation. Mm-hmm. So we decided, well, we'll have to tiptoe around this, just get Trevor's view on it. He told us, look, I think Rob's going to go and look at the two yellows. Yeah. You could appeal them in those days. Yeah. And he might overturn one. So therefore, you know, it's not red and Peter can play at the weekend. So we really all need to be careful about what we say and do when we come on air. So, all right, OK. So
you know
where this is going. So,
I know what's
coming. So, Trev, what's the situation? And he explained this all very gently, and he's a man of honour, this referee, and probably one of the best that I've seen and worked with, and we're expecting that things will go our way. OK, thanks very much, Trev. Alan, well, we had that referee at Wickham 2 weeks ago. He's useless.
Well, there was an incident at Bolton, at Bolton this season. I was actually invited into the director's box, which was very nice, and Alan was in the row behind me. Wickham were one up, and Onya Dinmer went through on his own, round the keeper. The keeper brought him down. Penalty. He's got to go off. He's got to go off.
Yeah, sounds like him. Sounds like AP.
So I said to Alan, don't you remember in 2016 they just slightly revamped the rules? And if you're going away from goal and the referee deems it accidental, it's only a yellow card. Yeah, but he's got to go. He's got to go. And of course, he didn't go. And
I'm so glad he's in the book, Neil. It wouldn't have been the same if you hadn't had a couple of Parry stories in that book, you know.
Oh, he's just the best, Alan. So, the book, Close Quarters, doesn't just live through the pandemic, but what a way to conclude with a playoff final victory as well. And a promotion to the Championship for the first time ever in the club's history.
Yes. I actually thought the defining moment, though, guys, was when we... I say we, I shouldn't... the Royal We. We played Fleetwood in the first semi-final, the first leg of the semi-final up there.
Yes, I remember.
It was a very tense day, poured with rain, and Gareth said to me, I'd want you to hear this. And he was walking around the hotel foyer and a mumbling to himself, and he had a speech that he had in his head. He didn't want to read it out. He wanted to actually say it as he was in the room. So Richard Dobson, his brilliant number two, gave the tactical stuff. And Gareth just came in and said, right, he said, how many people in this room have been involved in playoffs before? And there was quite a distinct shuffling of chairs because there'd been League Two playoffs and League One matches that a few of the guys had been involved in. And he said, and he just went, he just, for the next 10 minutes, he gave a speech that Richard III would have been proud of, about family and about we're all in this together. That sounds a bit glib, but I want you. There's no fans here, so you need to be your own fans. You've kept in touch with each other during the pandemic. I haven't told you to do that. Your family, go out there and imagine all the moments when you felt like you were a kid again. Bring that to the. I believe in you 100%. Bring that to the game, and you'll win. And it was such a powerful. Mm. Moment.
And
within a minute they've taken the lead, and it's just as though it was destined to be the semi-final. The final at Wembley, it was a peculiar occasion. The Oxford guys were very confident, and they'd beaten Wickham in the only time they played in the league, because the home match was postponed because of the COVID. And to be fair, it was a typical Wickham performance. Got a goal from a set piece, conceded a goal when the guy was meant to cross it and cross it into the net, and then won it with a penalty 10 minutes from time. It was so typical Wickham. It was the prelude to a quite an incredible evening, as you boys can possibly imagine.
Well, Gareth has been brought up the right way as a former Don, of course. So he knows
fantastic.
How to celebrate.
His parents are wonderful. His family is very strong. He's very secure in his own being.
He looks at Neil when you see him on the touchline. I don't know him very well, but you know he carries himself well.
Yeah, it's true, Andy. The one thing about Gareth that he keeps going, he said football isn't my be all and end all. Mm. He's got his music. He's got his kids. And I honestly think if they went down and they said, sorry, Gareth, you go, okay, I'll go and lead my band for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I hope it's not the case. I saw a piece recently with him where he said that they tell me if I cut my hair, I'd get a bigger job. Well, I hope that isn't the case.
No.
That shouldn't be
really?
A bar to him getting a bigger job, should it?
No.
It shouldn't, although it's funny because he was interviewed for the Sunderland job midway during the season before Phil Parkinson got it. And a lot of the social media reaction is, do we want this punk managing Sunderland?
Yeah, it's a shame. It's wrong.
It is ridiculous.
It's terribly wrong. And I actually think they probably would have gone up if he'd
fair point,
taken over. Mm. But that's the way people view. You know, why should the length of your hair have any bearing
exactly.
on your talent as anything?
Regarding the book, a beautiful piece of work. So says Mike Ingham, former BBC football correspondent. Excellent book on a triumphal season, Ollie Holt from the Mail on Sunday, and a story well worth telling, recounted with almost excessive attention to detail, uplifting, Patrick Collins, former nice. Sports Writer of the Year at the Daily Mail, of course. Neil, we can't thank you enough for spending time with us, and I have to confess I am not through, but I've already started the book and thoroughly looking forward to completing it. It's been great to talk again, my friend.
It has been. It has been, Neil. Thank you.
Yeah, Richard and Andy, really terrific. And good luck to you. And I'm on to my next project now, which may not be football, but maybe we'll chat about that in a year's time.
Any time, Neil,
sounds
that
like
you're available to join us, we are more than happy to share thoughts and memories with you. And if nothing else, we'll see you here in 2022.
Yes, of course we will.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Neil. All the best. Neil Harmon, and thanks once again.
Yes.
Thanks once again, Neil, for taking time
I'm so
with us.
I'm so glad he's got Parry and Alan Parry in his book.
Absolutely. And to all of you at Wickham, good luck to you. I really, really hope that the season works out as you would wish.
Tough start, but
Andy, it's like Akin Fenwa says, we're here to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a throwback as well, isn't it?
Of course
so
it is.
Good luck to them.
Yeah.
Briefly, Everton in general, quite a start.
Listen, you know me, I said to you last season, I said if he comes, Carlo, hungry, with his mojo, not just a payday, but he was really keen to go, we'd got ourselves a fantastic coach and manager. And I think that's been proven, that he is serious. He's gone in there, he's had a look. He said, right, this is who I want to get James Rodriguez in and players of that standing. Was fantastic for the club. It gave them a lift. I think he's got them playing differently. I said that to you. To use modern phrases, he's got them playing through the lines much quicker. He doesn't mess about at the back too much. He doesn't like them popping it about 20 passes across the back four. Neither do I. Neither do Evertonians. And he's got us moving forward. And I think he's got... And you see that with Dominic Calvert-Lewin at the start to the season.
Yeah, a player that, again, we've discussed many times on BeIN Sports. I always said, you've been a fan for a long time. I said to you, there's something there. The one thing I think Everton still miss is men. Rodriguez was always going to start well in the sunshine on glorious playing surfaces. I'd like to see come November, December, January, what sort of impact he's having
then. I think we've got men.
I think Calvert-Lewin's growing into a man.
But I think we have.
I have to say, but enormously impressive.
Exactly. Alan, I think, is a man. Andre Gomez, definitely a man. Abdoulaye Doucouré, definitely a man.
I was concerned pre-season that they were going down the same route that they have the last 3 or 4 years and there was too much Hollywood about it.
No.
And when Howard Kendall got things moving, it was with men.
Yeah.
And that's what Everton need right now to compete.
I do. Richarlison, I think, he looks like he's really enjoying himself as well. And I think definitely, I think they've got a really good mix right now. I know they're still keen. They just bought Godfrey, I think, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
£28 million from Norwich. a centre-back. So it shows you he's a little bit worried about that area of the pitch. And Nkunku, who they've got left-back, I saw play in midweek, I think, in a League Cup tie. I thought, who is this guy? Where is
it's been too long.
I'm hoping. Listen, as every Evertonian will tell you, three or four results, it's a wonderful start. It's great to enjoy it. Mm. It's great to be having the positive things to say. But no one's fooled as if to think that this is how it's going to be the whole season. I hope it is. And I've said to you, I think they've moved on. And I think there's a real chance now that with the confidence that's flowing through this group right now. And it looks like it. You see them enjoying themselves hugely, Richard, on the football pitch. And you can't buy that. Players enjoying their work. It's brilliant to see. Mm.
Okay, another reminder, this is an exclusive podcast. You won't find us anywhere else, so do follow and subscribe. Share on whatever platform you get your podcasts on. You can follow us and get in touch via Twitter at Keys and Gray Pod and on Instagram at Keys and Gray, the podcast. Email to Keys and Gray, the podcast at gmail.com. And all things being equal, wherever you've listened, you'll be doing so this same time next week.
Absolutely.
Enjoy.
Look forward to it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.